COVID once again makes the news. We enter the holidays and now face the Omicron variant. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. We're going to get the latest on the Omicron, discuss its reaction to vaccines, and what researchers are expecting could happen this holiday season. Also, cruise ships are back to bringing tourists into Key West. City leaders and voters who wanted to restrict those ships are considering what to do now without getting into a legal fight with Tallahassee lawmakers. Finally, there's a special concert happening in Doral. We'll talk jazz and Trinidadian Christmas traditions. All of that today on Sundial after the news. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you again for your support during this winter membership campaign. The Omicron variant of the coronavirus has been detected in Florida. The first infection was confirmed earlier today at a Tampa Bay hospital. The variant that originated from South Africa has been found in different parts of the U.S. and around the world by now. For context, the Delta variant is thought to have been spreading for weeks in Florida before it was officially detected. Earlier today, we spoke with Dr. Glenn Morris. He's the director of the University of Florida Emerging Pathogens Institute. This conversation was recorded earlier today before the first case of Omicron was detected in the state. When we look at the Delta variant, which took a couple of months for it to become the dominant strain in Florida, how does Omicron compare?
Well, Omicron is, in many ways, a very different virus. And again, I think the thing to emphasize is that coronavirus, as with most viruses and pathogens, is constantly undergoing evolution, change, mutating. Delta was a pretty nasty character. It moved through. It spread very rapidly. It was more rapidly spreading than the earlier variants. It appears to cause potentially more severe disease, but it clearly caused a lot of people to get sick, particularly those who were not vaccinated. Omicron comes in a little different setting. It appears to be spreading very rapidly, and so it seems to have some of the same rapid spreading capabilities that Delta does, perhaps even better than Delta. But there's still an awful lot we don't know about it. We don't know whether it's going to cause more severe disease, less severe disease. And in particular, we don't know how much protection we're going to be getting from prior infections with other coronavirus variants or from vaccines in terms of preventing illness.
So does that
mean we're still sort of in a wait and see mode with this particular variant.
Yeah, I guess then, is it fair to say we don't know yet who's really vulnerable? I mean, it's fair to say people who are not vaccinated are probably more vulnerable, but we don't really know yet with this one.
We don't really know yet with this one, although I think that in general, what I would say is that if you haven't been vaccinated or if you haven't gotten your booster, you definitely need to do that, because while Omicron is the one that's getting all the headlines, there's still an awful lot of Delta around. And here at University of Florida and in multiple hospitals across the state, we continue to have patients coming in who are unvaccinated with severe disease and unfortunately, in some cases, fatal disease.
And so, what about kids?
Kids, again, tend not to get as sick. We are not, right at the moment, here in Florida, we are fortunate. We had a really massive outbreak a couple of months back, which to a degree sort of burned through all of the susceptibles in the state. And at that point in time, when we were seeing so many cases, we were seeing a fair number of kids showing up in the hospital and in the intensive care unit here at Chan's Hospital at University of Florida. Right at the moment, the numbers are way down, which is a good thing. And we're sort of waiting to see what's going to happen when Omicron takes off. Again, we haven't seen it yet here in Florida, but I would say there is a high likelihood that it's already starting to circulate. And it's going to take us a little while to really come to grips with what it's going to do for both adults and kids.
What do you think we could expect, considering the fact we're now in the holiday season and travel is up like a lot? And talking to the airport, they're seeing big numbers, pre-pandemic numbers in some cases. What do you think is going to happen? Could it spread that quickly?
Well, I think, again, travel gets a lot of blame for a lot of this. The thing about it is, usually what happens with these variants is that by the time you're really starting to see something and become aware of issues with travel, it's already introduced into the community and is already starting to spread rapidly. And so in that sense, sometimes the travel-related cases may not have that much impact when you're further down the road and actually begin to realize that you've got a problem. I think the main thing is, as with all coronaviruses, you need to be careful in terms of social distancing, careful in terms of avoiding places where there may be aerosols of the virus, small closed spaces with lots of people talking, singing, eating, drinking, and masks do work. They definitely reduce the risk that you're going to get infected. So sort of the standard procedures that we've used for coronaviruses all the way through still apply in these instances. And wear a mask, particularly if you're at higher risk, and make sure your vaccines are up to date. Make sure you get your booster. Avoid tight, closed spaces with poor ventilation and maintain your social distance.
You said it earlier. You talked about vaccines. We're not really sure, how effective the current vaccines are against this new variant, the Omicron variant. Still, though, you're saying we should have those vaccines and the boosters if possible. But, how long do you think it's going to take before we know the effectiveness of the vaccines on this variant?
We'll probably know something within a couple of weeks. And as I said, I think the thing to emphasize is that even though Omicron is the one that's in the headlines, the variant that's killing people in Florida right now is Delta. Delta is still here. We continue to have, while a low level of cases, we continue to have cases. And for people who are not vaccinated, it remains a very definite risk. So yes, get the vaccine, get the booster, and let's see what happens when Omicron has been here for long enough for us to get a sense for what it's capable of doing.
And I'm sure that you probably have seen that still a lot of parents are hesitant to even get their kids vaccinated because they can at this point. But, what do you say to those parents now? And especially they're seeing, another variant?
Right. And the thing about it is there will continue to be other variants. I think that what we need to do is sort of settle in with appreciating that coronavirus is going to be endemic, at least for the foreseeable future, i.e., it's going to continue to occur at low levels, potentially with seasonal spikes for Florida, potentially summer spikes. And under those circumstances, there are going to be differences from variant to variant. Some are going to be nastier than others. And under those circumstances, it makes sense to administer the vaccine, both to protect the kid, but the other side of it is kids can also serve as a very effective means of transmitting the virus into households. And so not only to protect the kids, but also to protect their household members, to protect grandmother who may be living in the same household or next door, but to protect other people who may be at greater risk for severe disease.
Real briefly, Dr. Morris, considering what Florida went through in the first surge and then the Delta surge, how confident are you we have the infrastructure, the healthcare system to, if in case we had a third surge?
Well, I think, again, I think we are going to continue to see cases of coronavirus, hopefully not surges of the same magnitude because of the level of pre-existing immunity within the population both due to vaccination and to prior infection. I'm not too worried about our medical capacity at this point. I think that the big problems occurred at the very beginning when we really had very little immunity within the population. Everybody was susceptible and we didn't have a vaccine. With a vaccine, we have the ability to protect people who are susceptible, i.e. the elderly, those who are immunosuppressed, cancer patients. We've got a pretty good idea of who's at risk. And again, I think the thing to emphasize is that what we really need to do is get the overall level of immunity within the population to as high a level as possible. That includes immunizing kids. That includes immunizing basically everybody so that we minimize the risk to highly susceptible individuals.
And as you said, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll know a lot more about this variant. Dr. Glenn Morris is the director of the University of Florida Emerging Pathogens Institute. Dr. Morris, I appreciate the insight. Thank you so much.
Certainly.
And again, stay tuned on to WLRN. We'll keep you updated on the Omicron and Delta variants, on COVID in general, as we have been since the beginning of the pandemic. Well, still to come, cruise ships have returned to Key West and resentment is churning. But first, if this kind of national to local coverage is an important part of your daily diet, you know what? We need your support. This is our winter membership campaign, and we want to take a moment to stop and say thank you for your support. But if you haven't, please do so. Make a call or go online. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Voters in Key West were very clear. Last year, they said no to large cruise ships docking at their port. And then Florida lawmakers in Tallahassee basically overturned the vote. Well, just last week, the first cruise ship in more than a year arrived in Key West. Some businesses were happy. They were ecstatic to see the tourists. And other people remained staunchly against these large ships churning up the waters. We're joined now by WLRN Keys reporter Nan Klinginer. Nan, I saw the pictures. Interesting to see a cruise ship back in Key West. The passengers get off. There were people waiting there, happy to see them. Overall, what was the reaction?
Well, as you said, there were people waiting there, happy to see them, holding signs, applauding, you know, yelling out welcome. They were the people that were allowed out there onto the cruise ship dock. So people holding signs against bigger ships were not allowed out there.
So in your reporting, you talk about those who are really happy to see this because it means more business. But the city, like I said, there was a vote to put restrictions on these ships. Remind us again briefly what the vote was.
Yeah, the voters of Key West approved three provisions. One, capping the number of people a day who could visit by cruise ship at 1,500. Also limiting the capacity of ships that could come here to 1,300 people. So that's basically the size of the ship. And requiring the city to prioritize ships with the best health and environmental safety records.
And then the Florida legislature said, not so fast.
Yes, they did. There were a lot of twists and turns in that saga, but eventually they passed a law that said you could not regulate a port based on a voter initiative like they did here in Key West.
And just a reminder, too, is that, we have our podcast, WLRN's Tallahassee Takeover, and we dig into what the legislature was doing in that particular story as well, so people can check that out. Overall, though, Nan, I mean, now that you've had that first cruise ship and more are coming, I mean, what's the sense on the island right now? What do you get?
Well, I mean, it depends whether you're standing on the dock or looking at Facebook, or talking to people. But all I can tell you is that 60% of the voters did approve those limits. You know, that's a pretty strong majority, and they were approved in every single precinct of the city.
One of the interesting photos that obviously all over Twitter and everything is when the ship is leaving. And you see the waters churned up beneath it because the propeller is churning up everything underneath it. That's a big issue for a lot of people there.
Those images were actually as the ship was coming in.
Oh.
That's what happens and has been happening, is there's a lot of sediment and silt along the channel and the bottom of the harbor, and it does get kicked up by these massive propellers. And that's a huge concern for a lot of people, because they say it just covers, you know, the bottom of the ocean, and there's important stuff down there like coral and seagrass.
The city is going to try and talk to everybody to try to find a middle ground. I mean, I know they were going to talk to attorneys. They talked to attorneys, but what are city officials doing right now? Because it seems like they want to make everybody happy.
Right. Well, they want to make everybody happy. And at least some of the city officials want to, you know, enact the will of the voters, even if the legislature had a different idea. So they are attempting to be in talks with the managers of Pier B, which is the major cruise ship berth in the city. And they are also talking to the Safer Clean Ships folks, the people who organized the referendum that led to those limits, and to some of the other parties who are concerned. So, yeah.
And they want to talk to the cruise industry as well, if they had any luck in that?
The mayor is definitely in talks with the cruise industry, with the different cruise lines, about the ships they have that do meet those limits that can come to Key West. And in fact, there are 12 of them scheduled right now for Mallory Square, which is a city-owned square right next to Pier B.
Mm. So the legislature is again going to be looking at another bill in this arena. They're going to be looking at a bill that could put financial pressure, fees and fines on cities that try and pass ordinances that hurt business. This is just another way of trying to say to cities, don't do this.
Right. Yeah. There's a bill scheduled for the session that begins in January that would allow you to sue if the local government passed an ordinance that you say hurt your business or its profits.
And you just said a moment ago, because you're talking about like some of the city leaders, but what about also the county? You know, what's their role in all this?
They really don't have one, because it's a city-run port. So the City Commission of Key West is essentially the Port Authority.
Mm. All right. I was there. I think people may remember I was there during the Hemingway days, and it was so busy. Even before the cruise ship, I mean, business was up in Key West, wasn't it?
Yes. We're setting sales tax records. I just got the latest numbers, and through October, our average hotel occupancy is 82% with an average room rate of $382. I mean, I think any destination in the country would be thrilled with numbers like that.
So, I mean, I'm just wondering, like, some of those businesses that are happy to see the tourists, aren't they happy already? Because it seems like there are a lot of tourists coming anyway.
Yes, although there are some businesses that are very, very, very reliant on the cruise ships specifically, both tourist-related businesses, like I talked to an ice cream shop owner down there, and also, for instance, the ship's agent that does the logistics for the ships as they come in, or the harbor pilots that guide the ships come in, but some of the tour companies are very reliant on cruise ships specifically.
All right. Wait, did you just say average hotel room now is going for what?
$382 year to date. So
where are you getting that? Because I was looking for one. I can't find anything that's cheaper than $400.
Yeah, the July average was $420. Sorry, Lewis.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Not even an Airbnb that was cheap. How many cruise ships are they expecting to come in every week?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mentioned that ship's agent that handles the logistics. They will not tell the city what the schedule is for arriving cruise ships, because they say that the opponents have made threats on Facebook and that there's this serious threat to their safety and the passenger's safety. Are currently not telling the city when these ships are going to show up.
But threats like what?
I haven't even seen them, so I don't want to repeat anything like
okay.
that.
No, I got you. But just briefly going back, the city was supposed to speak with the city attorney about moving forward. What's the fear that they don't want to have to make this a legal issue with state lawmakers again?
Right. And they've hired an attorney, an outside counsel, to see if they can draft an ordinance that will stand up in court, and where they can basically do what the city voters wanted them to do. And in fact, on Monday, there's a city commission workshop where the only thing on the agenda is a discussion of direction to the city attorney and city manager about cruise ships.
This is a fascinating story, of course. And again, as you reported, you know, a cruise ship had already arrived, and we saw the reaction. Some people, again, very happy to see those tourists because it's big business. Some people still very upset because, as you pointed out, the vote was clear. 60% of people in Key West said no to those larger ships. But here we go. Business is going to move forward. We'll see what happens next. And again, all this reporting, if you want to check out Nan's story on this, just go to the website, WLRN.org. We'll also post it up on our social media, WLRN Sundial. Nan, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Lewis.
And again, you read the story up. It's on the website. And we're going to be following the story of what's going on in the legislature. Again, as I mentioned, there is a bill where they want to basically put fines on any city that tries to pass any ordinance that could hurt business. In other words, businesses could sue the city. So if you pass an ordinance, they would allow businesses to sue you if they believe that it hurt their business. All right, still to come, we're going to talk different styles of jazz and play some music with trumpeter Etienne Charles. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Lewis Hernandez. Thank you again for your support during this winter membership campaign. You're hearing Santa is Coming to Town by jazz trumpeter Etienne Charles. All right, I'm feeling the Christmas mood now. I'm in it. That is from his 2015 album called Creole Christmas. Born in Trinidad, Etienne's music melds inspiration from multiple cultures into his jazz compositions. He's performing this month at the Doral Live Outdoor Series of Concerts for the holidays, and Etienne Charles joins us now. Etienne, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Definitely. You know what? How would you describe your style, your musical style?
I would say I play Caribbean music. I play African diaspora music, Afro-descendant music, Creole music, as we call it, where I utilize or engage the rhythms from all over the Caribbean, South America, West Africa, East Africa, North Africa, the South of the United States, and bring it all together kind of in a one pot for the listener.
And where does that Creole influence come from?
I mean, I was born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago, so that's where it flourished at the beginning of my career. And so, you know, the Creole really refers to of the New World in a sense where, you know, whether it's part of the Caribbean or part of South America or part of somewhere like, you know, say like New Orleans or South Carolina, etc. But yeah, Creole normally refers to something of the New World. Mm. And so that's where the inspiration for me comes from.
What point in your life were you first introduced to jazz music? Was it like an album that you heard, or where did you hear it and what did you think?
I think I heard jazz for the first time. I was a teenager. I was listening to the first album I got was a Monty Alexander album called Yard Movement. And I remember it very clearly because it was an album where he was utilizing reggae rhythm very strongly throughout the album, all these different types of reggae, the Naya Bingi, etc. And so immediately my first introduction to this music that people call jazz was one where there was this Caribbean beat going on, this Caribbean lilt throughout.
Hmm. Your 2016 album called San Jose Suite was a musical discourse on, and I have to get this right, I love this, on the effects of colonialism in Costa Rica, California, and Trinidad. Let's take a little listen. ¶¶ All right. First of all, I love that idea in that you're telling this very complex story through music. How do you go about telling the story of the effects of colonialism on all these countries through jazz?
Well, first you have to learn the story. So the first part for me was to travel to the three different places. I chose those three places because they all had the name San Jose, and they were all former colonies of Spain. So the first thing I did was travel to each place, and then you have to pick your topics. So I was specifically referring to the Afro descendants as well as the indigenous populations in each place. And so I went specifically, and I stayed with those people, and I learned their music. I participated in rituals in each place, and then from that I take the stories and experiences that I had with understanding the history, also not just what's the written history, but also the people's history. Because a lot of times when you're dealing with marginalized people, what's written is actually just one side of the history. And then I, you know, with the music, I try to create a mood that will tell that story. So if you listen to Moekma from San Jose Suite, which was a piece I wrote about the Moekma Ohlone people of the San Jose area of California, they're one of the last indigenous tribes and nations still in the Bay. And so I met with them, and the chairperson of the tribe, I said, well, what do you want me to do? She said, write a piece, tell our story. And so the piece is a very somber, it's a somber color that I'm using to try to just show that they, what they did throughout their time here. And so throughout it's with Baruka, it's a very joyful, festive piece because it's about a ritual that they do at the end of the year. So the solemn parts of it, the music gets solemn, and then it gets back to being bouncy and danceable.
Yeah.
So Throne Revolt is another one where it's about a mutiny of the Africa, the West Indian Red, the British West Indian Regiment that was based in Trinidad in the early 19th century, and it's about this mutiny. So it starts off with this bubbling of the drums, because it's like it doesn't start as a mutiny. It starts as the inkling and the rumbling before the storm hit, before the fight. And so that's how you can take an idea from history. Once you know the story, you take it, and then you, the same way you would paint, then you set the scene, kind of like a writer sets the novel, you set the scene, and then you develop it.
A little bit of a history buff, and something that I love to dive into, and never thought of thinking of history through music though. And I could see myself reading that history and then listening to you at the same time, and I would see it and hear it. I think that in of itself is fascinating. You've been written into the U.S. Congressional Record for your contributions to Trinidad and Tobago and the world, really. What does an accolade like that mean for you?
I mean, it was very humbling, but it was huge at the same time. And it happened a long time ago. I was kind of surprised, taken aback. I think it was in 2012 to commemorate Caribbean Heritage Month. When I was told that it was happening, I was just like, wow. It just goes to show that, you know, you might not even be paying attention to certain things, and things are happening. And so I always keep my head down and I do my work, and I always try to make sure that the people of Trinidad and Tobago and the culture of Trinidad and Tobago is weaving in and out of everything that I do, because that's who I am. That's what my music really fuels. And to be recognized for that with a congressional record was a huge honor, one that I'm still very grateful for to this day.
And you are now on the jazz faculty as an associate professor at UM's Frost School of Music. What kind of questions, I wonder, you get from the students about your process, and what do you tell them?
It's interesting because, you know, I just had a lesson before this, and a student brought in a composition that he's working on, and so I looked at the page, and he played it, and I said, it sounds like it needs a little bit of space. The space is between each of the phrases. So then I told him to play it again, and this time, see if you feel a pause come at any point while playing to see how your lines can become phrases instead. And he asked me specifically, he was like, what made me think to do that? And so I was like, well, listen to the music and see what it tells you. And so the interesting thing is the students ask questions, and a lot of times I just let the music answer it for them. I actually let them find the answer. I hardly ever give answers. I normally just let them, you know, if they ask me something, I'll say, okay, let's play it again and see what it feels like this time and think about this or think about that. But the questions vary from when do you use a sharp 11 to what inspired this piece and what is Trinidad like? I get all
Well, you know what? I mean, you get the question of what's Trinidad like, but I want to ask you what's it like been living for you living in Miami in South Florida?
Almost great, you know, it's warm for one.
Well, Trinidad, it's nice and warm in Trinidad.
But before this, I lived in the middle of Michigan. I lived in
Oh,
Lansing, Michigan
okay, never
before.
mind.
So that part is great, and I love Miami because one, I have a lot of family here. I'm from, you know, if you're from the West Indies, you probably have some family in South Florida, New York, London, Toronto. So I have a lot of family here in South Florida, and on top of that, I love how so many different immigrant cultures come together and all have their own voices here, specifically within the arts, because that's what makes it so unique from almost any other city that I've been to. Is that you see it not only in visual art, but you also see it in music, and you see all of these different cultures, you know, the Cuban culture, the Venezuelan culture, the English-speaking Caribbean culture. You see them all, and they all have their voices, and they all have their spaces here in Miami. And so for me, that was one of the biggest draws to why I wanted to come down here, is because I wanted to be in not just a place with immigrants, but specifically in an immigrant community, because there's a clear difference. There are immigrants everywhere, but to have a space and a voice and have a body in a city is something that you don't see everywhere.
And
It's something special.
that's what makes Miami and South Florida so absolutely unique. And by the way, people can see you present. You're going to be performing again at the City of Doral's Outdoor Holiday Concert Festival. It's called Doral Live. That's on December 18th. We're going to post all that information on our social media at WLRN Sundial. Again, you're going to be performing Creole Christmas show from your 2015 album. I just want to thank you so much, Etienne. It's such a pleasure. I'd love to spend more time talking to you, but I got to end it here. Etienne Charles, jazz trumpeter. Etienne, thanks so much and have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you. You too. Have a happy holiday.
And that is our program for this Tuesday, December 7th. Coming up tomorrow on the show, Florida is getting billions of dollars from the bipartisan infrastructure bill that Congress passed recently. We're going to hear about two water quality improvement projects that officials in Lake Worth Beach are hoping to spend that money on. Also, comedian and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me panelist Paula Poundstone is coming to South Florida. We talked to her about her decades of performing and the future of comedy. That's coming up tomorrow on the show. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Stay safe. Be good to each other. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute and also listeners like you.